Last week we, in learning Parshas Vayikra, really started the important part of the discussion about Purim. And we spoke about the notion. First of all, we talked about the Karbonos. The main beginning was talking about the Karbonos and the idea that the person in bringing the Karbon is trying to take the animal, the behemah, and bring it up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, be makriv. We spoke about Karbon being offering as opposed to sacrifice. And we used basically as the paradigm for understanding the Karbonos, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which says that three people who are sitting around the table and eating, and they say around the table, Divrei Torah, it's as if they're eating off of the Mizbeach. What's the metaphor? What's the connection? Why is that eating off of the Mizbeach? Because what they're demonstrating there, as they're eating and learning words of Torah, they're demonstrating that their eating is not just some other enterprise, that they pursue other things in their lives, but rather, even their eating is somehow, even their physical involvements in this world is all for that purpose, streamlined for the purpose of being able to do bigger and better things. And therefore, that is like eating off of the Mizbeach, because that's the Karbon. The Karbon isn't just this dramatic expression, oh, I deserve to die, let me kill this animal instead, which is altogether a little bit hard to get your arms around, to understand. The idea is that the person who has in themselves an aspect, a physical body, which is very similar to the behemah, takes it and instead is saying, I'm bringing it up to Hashem. I'm saying that I'm not leaving it just stam, that part of me is this animal part that will just always remain an animal part. Instead, I want to bring it forth and offer it up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And make that also, sanctify that as well. And we went on to talk a little bit, I'm not going over everything which we discussed, then just streamlining a little bit to talk about what we find in the Yontiv of Purim. In the Yontiv of Purim, we have this very, very strange, difficult to understand observance called Chayvinish Livsumei Bepuria Adelo Yada. A person's supposed to drink till they don't know the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai, whatever it means, literally, non-literally. And we learned the Maharal. And the Maharal explained that the Purim is the celebration of the saving of the bodies of the Jewish people from destruction. The bodies of the Jewish people were threatened. Haman wasn't into religious persecution. He was interested in lahashmid laharogu la'abeid, to destroy the physical bodies of the Jewish people. And so, on Purim, we celebrate the saving of the physical bodies of the Jewish people. As opposed to Yom Kippurim, where we celebrate the saving of the souls of the Jewish people from the Satan that wants to eradicate the souls, be machris, cut away the souls of the Jewish people, and we celebrate that purely spiritually. On Purim, we're celebrating the physical salvation of the Jewish people. And so, we have just the guf, the body, without das, without wisdom, without understanding. And somehow, as we were discussing, the idea would only have place where you understand that you've already to some degree lifted up that guf. You've lifted up the body so that even after all is said and done, even after that drink is taken, it's still nikar, it's still visible that this is the body that was somehow different, that was somehow raised up. Now that all sounds very vague, certainly, even if you were here last week, but certainly if you weren't. So what we're going to do today is we're going to start from another starting point, and hopefully, as we proceed, we'll understand a little bit better. A little bit better about this, a little bit better about the general context. Okay. So today we're not making any apologies. We're not speaking about Korbanos. We're speaking about Purim. It'll tie into what we learned about Korbanos, even though this week's Parsha, but this week's Me'ena Mu'ura is Purim, is Shushan Purim, Shabbos, and so on. The Gemara famously makes a cryptic comment in Maseches Chumah. The Gemara has a strange question, for which it gives perhaps an even stranger answer. The Gemara says, where do you find Haman in the Torah? Haman min haTorah minayin. You're supposed to find Haman in the Torah. There's some kind of a presumption. You'll find Haman in the Torah, even though Haman was much later. Where do you find Haman in the Torah? The Gemara asked this question only about three people. It asked about four people. It asked about Haman. It asked about Esther. It asked about Mordechai. Right? That's a common theme there. And then it also asks about Moshe Rabbeinu. At least where you find them in the very beginning of the Torah. Not too hard to find Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah once you get to Sefer Shmos. So the Gemara says, where do you find Haman in the Torah? Says the Gemara, I'll tell you where. Hamin ha'etz. What's the pasuk Hamin ha'etz? When Hashem came to Adam and he said, why are you hiding? Why are you hiding there in the bushes? Did you eat from the tree that I told you not to eat from? So Hamin, take the vocalization, change it, take the pintalach, change them, and you have Haman. Hamin ha'etz, Haman. There you have Haman in the Torah. Okay, so strange question. Why the Gemara should ask the question? Even more difficult to understand the answer. So store that away. Why is that? Store that away. Now let's learn, perhaps one of the most famous midrashim of Purim, a medrash which is found in the Gemara in Maseches Megillah, a medrash which will probably be on display on dozens or hundreds of Purim costumes over the next little while. This is the Medrash about the beginning, really the first story of the Megillah. The first story of the Megillah is Vashti. Right? Ahasuerus makes a party, he invites Vashti, and Vashti can't come. So let's look at what it says. Bayom Ashvi Ketov Lev HaMelech Bayoyim. On the seventh day of the party, as the king's heart was good, Zachin Vey, with wine. Says the Gemara, Adu ad hashta leitav libe bechamra. Tell me something, it took him 7 days to get a little happy? Says the Gemara, Amar Rava Yom Hashvi Shabbos Haya. She Yisrael Eichlin v'shoysin, maschilin b'divrei Torah v'divrei tishbachos. Yom Hashvi was Shabbos. The seventh day was Shabbos. Wasn't just the seventh day of the party, it was the seventh day. You know what happens on the seventh day? The Jewish people, they sit down at their tables and they eat and they drink. And what do? They set out in words of Torah, in Zmiros, words of praise to Hashem. The Jews would be sitting on Shabbos, every Shabbos, and making a party. And when they make that party, what happens? Divrei Torah and Zmiros. That's the caricature, hopefully not a negative sense, that's the picture of the Yom HaShvi of the Jewish people. A mishteh, a feast, with wine, right? Kiddush, mandated, plus, and they're involved in Torah and Tishbachos, in a sense, fulfilling classically that mishnah and Pirkei Avos that we were started with, right? Sitting around the table, eating and drinking and involved in words of Torah. So here you have it. They're eating and drinking, and they start out with Divrei Torah and Tishbachos. Avol Eivdei Kechavim She'echlin V'Shoysin Ein Maschilin Ela B'Divrei Tiflus. But here, the Pasuk presents the contrast. On the seventh day of that party, it really brought out the difference between the Jews and the Goyim. Because on the seventh day, when they did it, when they had their party, they started out on that seventh day with Divrei Tiflus, with the most lewd behavior imaginable. V'chein b'sudasei shalaisei Rasha. So it was highlighted in the meal of that Rasha. So you understand what the Gemara is saying, what the Medrash that the Gemara is bringing here is saying. You know, seventh day, well, it wouldn't have taken him 7 days to get intoxicated. But when the Jewish people came to that seventh day of Shabbos, and on Shabbos in their behavior, they demonstrated how a Jew celebrates, and what a Jew looks like when he celebrates, that brought out the contrast of how they looked when they celebrated. So it was by Yom HaShvi. Now this point by itself, before we get to the further along in the story, is essential. It's essential both in the theory and the practice of this strange mitzvah that we've been talking about. In the theory of it, it's essential because you see what the Gemara is saying here. That a part of the Purim story is to highlight the difference, excuse me, between a shikara yid and a shikara guy. Between a Jew who's sitting and eating and drinking And what's coming out of his mouth? Let's sing games on the Chubad again. You know, tell me something else on the Parsha, or tell me something else about the Megillah. The guy, who knows what else is going to be coming, as we know from the story of Ahasuerus. So it's part of the flow, the original flow of the story. When we say there's an obligation, Livsumei Bepuria, so Rashi says, you know what, why do we have to drink? Why does the Gemara say a person should drink on Purim, drink wine? We want to remember all of these parties, the party which Ahasuerus made, the parties which Esther made, but this is going to be a Jewish party. Purim is going to be a Jewish party. So theoretically, that's the concept. And of course, practically, it's the concept as well. Because sometimes, you know, when a Jew drinks, maybe you can't tell. Maybe you can't tell the difference. So whatever the mitzvah is, it is clear, absolutely clear, that what has to emerge from it is, you say, a shikur yid, geshmak. Not, a shikur yid, I can't believe it, it's disgusting, how can I handle it? It has to emerge something that magnificently shows the difference, that magnificently shows the quality. So that's the first point here that we go along in the Gemara. So what happens? So what did they start speaking about when they got drunk? They were sharing Divrei Torah? No. A big argument broke out in the meal between the participants from the range of Ahasuerus' kingdom. This one argued, the women from Madai, they're the most beautiful. And this one argued, no, the women from my area, from Paras, they're the most beautiful. That was what they were arguing about. Amar lehem Ahasuerus, so Ahasuerus said, in the most disgusting language, kli shani mishtamesh bay, the kli, the vessel that I use, eino lo madi v'loi parsi, she's not from Madai, from Media, she's not from Paras, from Persia, ela Kazdi. She's from the Kazdim, the Chaldeans. She was the daughter of Belshazzar. She was from the Babylonian area. Ritzayin chem liraisa. You want to see how beautiful she is? Amru loy in. They said, sure. Ubilvad shetei aruma. But we want to see her completely. She should be unclothed. Adds the Gemara a footnote. Shebemida she'adam maided ba maided in lay. Because a person is meted out the measure that they use themselves. Mida keneged mida, measure for measure, the classic method of judgment of Hashem. What does that mean? Again, this is all the footnote. This is not what the people said, not what the people thought. They said what they said because of what they were thinking. But this goes into the hashgacha of the story, Melamed. Shaisavashti harsha mevia benos Yisrael umafshitan arumais v'aisaven malacha b'shab. It was Shabbos. Vashti, in her cruelty and her desire to humiliate, used to bring Jewish girls to be serving her on Shabbos, and she did not allow them to be clothed. Haynu dechsiv, achar advor ha-melech, kesheich ha-mas ha-melech ha-chashver, zohar es Vashti v'sasher, al-sos v'sasher nigzor aleha. Kshem shosa kach nigzor aleha. Okay, so the Gemara brings a pasuk here in the Megillah that indicates it was Mida keneged Mida. So, on Shabbos, she would do this. On Shabbos, when we're supposed to be this lofty eating and drinking and singing the praises of Hashem and saying words of Torah, instead she took the daughters of Kol Yisrael and made them appear before her, humiliated, arumas. Okay? So, Mida keneged Mida, on this Shabbos of Ahasuerus' party, she was going to be made to do the same thing. Vatamoina Malka Vashti, but Vashti refused. Ask the Gemara, Michti pritzasa havoi, the Omar mar shneim ledvar aver niskavnu. My time aloy asoi. Why didn't she want to come? Wasn't she as lewd and whatever promiscuous as any of the men? Why did she refuse this opportunity to show herself off at the men's party? The Gemara alludes to something which was said earlier, that even though it seems like this was like a very frum party, remember? Vashti had her own party, right? It wasn't like they had separate seating. Wasn't even like they had a mechitza, they had separate parties, right, for men and for women. Says the Gemara, don't get the wrong idea. They were both Ludvar Aver and Iskavnu. They were both interested in whatever it was. Says the Gemara, so why is Vashti refusing? Answers the Gemara, Om Rav Yesi Ruchanina Melamed Sheporcha Botzaras. What happened was, she broke out. She would have loved to come, if she was looking good. but she broke out in Saras. So, every person's nightmare. She couldn't show up to the ball. The Masnisa Tana, in the Braisa we learned, Bo Gavriel v'asala zanav. No, something else happened. What happened was Gavriel came and he made her a tail. Okay? So when you see all those lovely Queen Esthers walking around in the street and they have little polka dots on their face and a tail coming out, it's Vashti, right? That's Vashti according to this Gemara. Famous, right? Most famous Chazal. So the Gemara then ends in a sense the way it started. Vayiktzov HaMelech Mahod, the king became very angry. Why did he become so inflamed? So she didn't want to come. So his wife didn't want to show up unclothed in front of the whole kingdom. I mean, you know, I've heard of more ridiculous objections. Omar Rava said, Sholchale, because her response wasn't just, no, I'm sorry, I can't come. She responded with a dig, and listen to the dig. Bar Arhurayre de Abba, you stable hand of my father. Abba lekabel alfa chamra shasi v'loi ravi. My father, Balshatzar, was able to hold his liquor. He would drink 1,000 quantities of wine, and he didn't get intoxicated. V'hu gavra ishtate b'chamre, you drink a little bit, and look at you. You're asking me to do such crazy things. Miyad v'chamosei b'arabai. Immediately he became upset. He was, you know, the son-in-law. His wife was really the queen. He was, right. So he was Queen Elizabeth's husband, Prince Philip, right? I'm sorry, I'm not a subject anymore. But Prince Philip, that's what Ahasuerus really was. She was the one who had inherited the Malchus. So she insulted him. And she insulted him about how her husband was able to hold his wine, but look how he behaves when he doesn't have it. He is the stable hand that somehow made it. This is the story. So there are who knows how many questions on this story. But let's perhaps ask the most basic one. And the most basic one is, what does it mean that she grew a tail? Why does the Chazal say that she grew a tail? I mean, breaking out, no, I can understand. That would accomplish the same thing. Pretty normal. Sometimes things like that can happen at exactly the wrong time. And it happened. Gavriel came and made her a tail. What does it mean that he came and he made her a tail? So, first of all, at the risk of placing many impending Purim costumes at risk, it's important to know that the Gedolei HaRishonim, like the Rashba, the Gedolei Meforshei HaAgada, like the Marsha, discuss whether Zanav means a tail. For instance, on Rosh Hashanah, what do? We eat the head of a fish, and we say Shenia L'Roish V'Loi L'Zanav. We should be a head and not a tail. Okay, so what exactly are you asking for there? You want to be a head? You don't want to be a tail? Was there any thought that that was actually going to happen? So obviously a head and a tail can be literally, you know, a head and a tail. Or on the other hand, it could be a figurative expression. Head is the top. The zanav is, you know, the bottom. You know, the tail, the bottom. We're asking, we should be on top. We shouldn't be on the bottom. Says the Rashba, zanav here doesn't mean that she grew a tail that was wagging as she was walking around her room. It means that she had a wart. She grew some redundant growth on her body. It wasn't radically different than what the first one said. The first one said she got saras, that she had a discoloration of her skin. The second one says she grew some kind of a wart, some kind of a growth. Basically, something that made it unpalatable for her, impossible for her to go and sort of try to show off her beauty because something showed up that marred the whole thing. That's the way the Rashba says it. The Gemara uses the expression, Gabriel came and grew her a tail. The other opinion is that she got tzaras, not just that she broke out. So what I would like to do with you here is point out to you two stories. Stories which may or may not be familiar to you, depending on how familiar you are with some of the farther reaches of Tanakh. But they're very open stories. These are not Midrashim. They're amazing stories. They're stories which include, to some degree, the miraculous. Not to some degree, to full degree, the miraculous. But they're not Midrashim. They're not midrashim, and so to a great degree they're not suffering from the sort of ambiguity that sometimes midrashim have. Doesn't mean it literally, doesn't mean it literally. One is a story about Nebuchadnezzar, and the other one is a story about the Melech Uzziyahu, the King Uzziyahu. The story about Nebuchadnezzar is as follows. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babel. He was the king of the world. He was the one who had destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. In Sefer Daniel, he describes as follows. I was walking by the palace of the king of Babel. Ona Malka v'Omar. The king responded and said, Haloidohi Babel Rabosa, the Ano Benisa, Leves Malka, Bitkaf Chasani Liakar Adari. Here is the great Babel, that I built it as my kingdom with my great strength and for my glory. Nice, good, haughty, arrogant words of a king. Oid Milsa Bepum Malka. And while those words were still coming out of the mouth of the king, Kol Min Shemaya Nafal, a voice came from the heavens and said, Loch Amrin Nebuchadnezzar Malcha. To you we say, Nebuchadnezzar the king. Daniel is hard, it's Aramaic, it's old Aramaic. Malchusa Odas Minach. The kingdom is going to leave you. You're going to lose your place. Not only will you lose your place in the kingdom, but Umin Enosha Loch Tardin. I'm going to remove you, in a sense, from humankind. You're not going to be like a person. V'imchevas berah, and with the animals of the wild, midorach, you will live. Ispo keturin loch yitamun. You're going to munch on grass like the cows. V'shiva idonin yachlifun alayich. And you will go through seven seasons. Ad itinda disholit ilo b'malchus enosha ulemon diyitzva yitnana. Until you will come to the recognition that God is the king of the world, and he gives any kind of rulership to those who he wishes. You forgot who the real king is. You walk out and say, oh, I'm the king of Babel. I made this kingdom. It's all mine. It's for my strength, for my glory. You will lose the kingdom. You'll lose your humanity. You'll eat, literally, you'll be running in the forest, munching grass. Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Babel, a great man. You read Sefer Daniel, you see he was a great man, even as a result of this story. Not simple, not, you know, stam some major egomaniac. A great man. Hashem doesn't let anybody just destroy the Beis HaMikdash. But he got full of himself, and Hashem said, you are going to get a very cold reminder. And he gets demoted from the kingdom and from humanity until he recognizes that Hashem is above it all. And indeed, Boshata, the verse continues right then. Miltsa Safas al Nebuchadnezzar. Something came over Nebuchadnezzar. Umin Enosha Torid. And he became indeed, to some degree, subhuman. The Ispa Ketarin Yechal. He went around munching on the grass. Umital Shamaya Gishma Yitztava. Adi Sara Kenashin Rabba Vitafrei Ketziperin. He was drinking from the rains and from the dew until literally his hair started growing. His nails were growing to claws. Ulektas yumaya ona Nebuchadnezzar ena lishmaya notlas umandai alay yasuf. But after some period of time, Nebuchadnezzar looked heavenward, and suddenly his mind came back to him. Ulilo barchas, and he benched Hashem. Ulechei alma shavachas, and he gave praise to the source of life of the universe. And he praised the one whose rulership is forever and whose kingdom transcends all generations. Anybody who lives on this world is nothing, so to speak, relative to him. He does according to his wish with those in the heavens, those down on this earth. Nobody can stop Hashem from doing whatever he wants. These were the recognitions that Nebuchadnezzar, roaming in the jungle like an animal, suddenly was again alerted to and awakened to. Bozimna minda yosef alei. When that came to him, his mind came back. Uliyikar machuse hadri. And he returned to his kingdom. Vizive yosef alei. And his presence of his face returned to him. Lihadbari ravana yivun. And I returned to my place and all my ministers around me, and I got everything. Now this, I was not reading it in the correct tense. This is all what Nebuchadnezzar actually wrote to his kingdom. He told his kingdom about his experience. And so I give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that everything is His. Anybody hear that story before? Okay? That's the story of Nebuchadnezzar. It's a dramatic story. And it's not a medrash. It's a pasuk. It's the verse. It's a biblical story about Nebuchadnezzar. He became full of himself, and the next thing you know, he's roaming the jungles with the animals, until he recognizes Hashem again, and then he rises up to that position. Okay, one story. A second story. From a Jewish king. Less dramatic, but dramatic. This is the story of Uzziyahu. It's told in Divrei Hayamim. Uzziyahu was a king. And when he affirmed his kingdom and became strong, Govali bo ad lahashchis. His heart just started flying up. Ad lahashchis, to the point of destruction, corruption. Vayimal b'Hashem alikov. He went and he did something against Hashem. What did he do? Vayovel hechel Hashem lahakter al mizbeach haktores. He went in to offer ketores, incense, on the mizbeach in the Beis Hamikdash, which was not his job. He was the king. He wasn't the kohen. Vayovel acharav Azario akohen dimal kohanim lahashem shvenim nechayil. So Azario, the kohen, with his assistants, they all came after him. Vayamdu al Uzziyahu, vayemru loy, loy loch Uzziyahu lahakter l'Hashem. Uzziyahu, don't. It's not your job. Ki lakohanim ne'aron ha'mekudoshim lahakter. It's for the kohanim who are sanctified for this, to do this job. Tzei min ha'mikdosh, ki ma'alta, leave the mikdosh because you have done something bad. Lo loch l'chavod me'Hashem Elokim. It's not yours, this kavod. Hashem has not given this to you. But Uzziyahu was angry. And as he was showing his fury, how dare you tell me what I shouldn't do? What happened? That tzaras zorcha b'mitzchay. And the tzaras suddenly started glowing on his forehead. Lifnei ha'kayanim beis Hashem mi'al mizbeach ha'kteres. Uh-oh. Vayifen elav azayo kayin orashich v'alkanim yinim mitzayr b'mitzchay. They saw him and he was a mitzayra. Ve'evalu misham, and they rushed him out of there. V'gamu nidchaf latzis ginogei Hashem. And he rushed out himself because he realized Hashem had stricken him. Right? They look at him, they say suddenly, they're arguing with him, you shouldn't do this, you're a king, you're not a kohen, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this. And suddenly they see he's a mitzorah. And they say, Uzziyahu, you have tzaras on your forehead. And he says, what? He runs out. He realizes Hashem has struck him. He's gone completely out of bounds. This is also a story of a king who thinks he runs the world. Nothing is above him. Even as he's going so-called to serve Hashem, he's ignoring Hashem. He's offering the Torah. The offering to Hashem becomes, instead of a position of servitude, it becomes a position of prominence and grandeur, like we had for a whole second, most of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim Gedolim. They weren't thinking about serving Hashem, they were thinking about their prominence. Uzziyahu forgot about Hashem. And what did Hashem do? Hashem gave him tzaras. Okay. Now, why do I bring these two stories? Because it parallels exactly what the Gemara says happened with Vashti. One explanation why Vashti couldn't come was because she developed tzaras. Not just that she got a pimple. She developed tzaras. And the second explanation of why Vashti couldn't come was because she grew a tail. She started to look like an animal. These two stories are stories of a person who thinks they're king. They forget about anything above them. And this is the result that happens. And both of these results, or either one of these results, depending how you understand the Midrashim, working with each other, or complement, or offering two sides, they came to Vashti. Okay. So, let's look in Vashti's case. Does she remember that there's a king over her? She's also perhaps arrogant. We certainly have no evidence of Vashti thinking about Hashem. We don't find her making these grandiose statements that Nebuchadnezzar made. We don't find her making the kind of affront to the service of Hashem specific to Uzziah, going and offering the Torah and ignoring the limitations. But we do find some other pretty nasty stuff about Vashti. And what was that? That she takes these Jewish girls and she forces them on the Shabbos day to go and work before her unclothed, ignoring their dignity, ignoring their specifically human quality. So let's now look back a little bit at Hamin Ha'etz. Okay, not really at those words Hamin Ha'etz, which we started with, but let's look back at that story, that beginning story, and see how directly it might impact on this whole picture. The other side of your page. The snake was Arum. Of all of the animals that Hashem had made. What does Arum mean? Exalted? Arum usually literally means unclothed. Here it doesn't make any sense that way, it seems. So what they translate as Arum is shrewd, right? Clever. Devious, right? Not in a positive way. The Nachash was the most devious of all of the animals that Hashem had made. And he said to the woman, I know Hashem said you shouldn't eat from all of the trees of the garden. So the woman says, whoa, we can eat from the trees of the garden. It was just that tree in the middle of the garden that Hashem said we shouldn't eat it. And we shouldn't even touch it, lest we die. So the snake said to the woman, you won't die. Because Hashem knows. On the day you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. Hashem doesn't want you to eat from the tree of the garden. You know why? Because He knows that when you eat from it, you're going to have His power. You'll be like God yourself, with knowledge of good and evil. And Hashem isn't interested in competition. He wants you to be lower than Him. And that's why He's closing this option out from you. The woman looked at the tree. It looked like it was good to eat. It was attractive to the eyes. It seemed like it was covetous to make one grow, make one wise. And she took from its fruit and she ate and she gave it to her husband. Their eyes opened. And they realized that they were unclothed. And they sewed for themselves fig leaves, and they made for themselves belts. They heard Hashem coming through the garden. They hid. And Hashem says, I really should have left a space. We skipped. Hashem has the whole conversation. And then He tells the Nachash, He tells the snake, because you did this, you are cursed of all the animals. You will slither al gechoincha on your belly, and you will eat dust. All of the days of your life. Now, what elements do we have here in the story of the Eitz Hadas? A key element in the story is Arum, unclothed. Adam and Chava, before this, as you have in the next passage, which maybe we'll look at a little bit more closely soon, they were Arum, they were unclothed, there was no shame. They ate from the Eitz Hadas. The first reaction was not that they died. It was not that suddenly they seemed to become like God. The first reaction was, uh-oh, we're unclothed. They realized that they were unclothed. So that's a key element here in the story. Another key element here in the story is what the Nachash says to them. He says, you understand, the thing is, you're under Hashem. Hashem has told you what to do. And it's so important for Hashem to leave it that way, that you should know He's boss. And in fact, the reason why He's telling you not from the tree of knowledge to eat from the tree of knowledge is because as soon as you eat from the tree of knowledge, you won't be so much the boss. You'll be pulling yourself up even. And that gets Chava to eat from it. She wants to resist God. She wants to resist God's commandment. She wants to resist God being over her. She wants to resist God's monopoly. He's the only one. He doesn't want you to eat from it. That's a second element. There's a third element. While we're into these stories that we like, what happened? So Vashti grew a tail. The other one is that Nachash was having a conversation with Adam and Chava. Now, what do you make of that exactly? It sounds like something out of a Richard Scarry book. You know, like what is it that the Nachash is talking to Adam, talking to Chava rather? You know, the Midrashim say Nachash really wanted to marry Chava. Like, what happened? When was the last time that happened to you? Please don't answer. Right? So you know, like, what's the story? What's the story here? And a big part of the story here is that the Nachash, the snake, speaks to man because what's the difference, after all, between the man and the animal? Usually, it's demonstrated by the power of speech, by the power of communication. We don't imagine the animals having the power of speech, although animals do seem to communicate with each other, but they b'chlal have no ability to communicate with us. Communication certainly is not something that we are able to share with them in any profound way, certainly. But, as we know, as we talked about in the beginning today, and as you know, we see from so many places, right, the difference, Umosar ha'adam min ha'behema, right, you recognize that phrase? What is the advantage of man over the behema, over the animals? Right, the end of that phrase is oyin, nothing. Right? That's a phrase which we say in a rather difficult vidui that we say in the Yom Kippur Shemoneh Esrei at the end. And we say it, some people say it every day in the beginning of davening. Umayisar adam en adema oyin ki akol havel. It's not so simple, the differences. The Nachash looked out at Chava, looked out at humankind, and said, you know, on the sixth day, all of us were created. Except they put a soul in you. And you're going to be higher than everybody else. I don't like that. I want to bring you right back down here. The Nachash was communicating with man and saying, you know, we've got a lot in common. That's how they talk. I mean, maybe I'm saying something fancy. I'm not really saying something simple. At that point in time, the snake was able to communicate with the person. They were like one family of the behemoths. And the snake was trying to bring the humans down to them. That's what Chazal are expressing when they say, you know, Nachash wanted to marry Chava. That's what Chazal are expressing when on the other end of the story, before it, Adam needs to find the zivug. He needs to find the mate, and Hashem says, okay, let me show you all the animals. And he looks at all the animals and he says, none of these have anything in common with me. They're two sides of one story. Right there, Hashem is trying to demonstrate, man, know that you're different. And so she says, yeah, I know that I'm different. I'm completely alone here. Okay, fine, I'll give you a wife. Now she's also of that same quality. You won't be alone anymore, you'll be together. Right after that, the snake says, what does this mean? They're separate from us. They're so high and mighty, they can't be with us. And the snake starts approaching Chava. And through the eating of the tree of knowledge, he wants to bring humankind down to the behemoths. To be just like them. To be just like them.
There's an irony here in the way he does it, because he's convincing them to do that which he really wants to do. He wants to be on par with the level above him, man. So he presents to man, you could be on par with the level above you, God.
Correct. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The one who does not want to accept have something above them. The Nachash doesn't want to accept to have man above them. Bring him down here. Man should not accept to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu above him. Bring me up there, bring him down here. Right? You usually can only imagine that you're going to bring down the one above you.
Why don't the Nachash just eat from the apple from the tree itself?
It won't help him.
Because he's not in that middle.
The tree of knowledge isn't going to make them like our kid. It's not going to add to them spirituality. It's not going to do it. The Nachash, if it would make us more like Elohim, then Hashem would have given us 5 servings of it for breakfast and another 5 for lunch. You understand? When Hashem created man, what did he say? Hashem was not insecure when he created man. Hashem said, I want to make man that's going to be a carbon copy of me. A tzelem elokim, an image of God. And here the snake is telling you, oh, Hashem doesn't want you to eat it because then you're going to be like him. That's why Hashem's whole goal was that we should be like him. But the way we would be like him would be by recognizing that he's above us. And the Nachash's picture of what it means to be like Elohim would be by saying, no, 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 you're not going to be under him. You'll be his equal. He won't be able to tell you what to do. This is the resistance of the Nachash. And to him, eating from the tree of knowledge would make you more like Elohim, more independent of Elohim, more independent, period, than to listen to Hashem and to follow him. So what happens? Suddenly, they eat from the tree of knowledge, and they become aware that they were erumim. They were unclothed. Now, all the animals of the world walk around unclothed, and they're fine with it. The human being, before they ate from the Eitz Hadas, they walked around unclothed, and they were also fine with it. Now, he ate from the Eitz Hadas, he realizes that he's unclothed. Maybe you would say, to some degree, you know, it's appropriate at this point in time. But in very shorthand, something changed here. When are you embarrassed of something? You know, if you're an auto mechanic, a fantastic, superb auto mechanic, right? You go into somebody's office, you're wearing your overalls, your hands are greasy, no problem. You can walk into your banker's office. You can walk into your lawyer's office. It's fine, right? This is exactly, you know, this is how I dress. This is what I'm supposed to be. On the other hand, you know, if you're a lawyer and you're going to show up in dirty clothes, you say, ah, for me it's pasnish. It doesn't match, right? It's just not according to the expectations of what I'm supposed to be. The human being became, when he ate from the Eitz Hadas, and he started going after the same things that the animals go after, because he has an neshama, he became embarrassed. The guf, the body, just going after physical things, not after lofty things, was no longer a badge of pride before he ate from the Eitz Hadas. So the body was, to use the parlance of last week and this year, it was this carbon. This, okay, it's an animal body, but it's all up there towards Hashem. He had nothing to be ashamed of. But now he was reaching out for other things, and the body became not quite up to that. And as long as the person is still sensitive to the fact that they have an neshama, that they have higher values and higher things that they live for, that's the extent that they will keep the quote-unquote less spiritual aspects of themselves and say, this is something that I need to hold in check, I have to modify. It's the real quality of the tznius. When you feel greater, then you're conscious of that which is not so great, not so naturally great. And so, Adam, in becoming aware of his nakedness, he hadn't descended to the level of the animals. And you see in the whole story that Hashem stops him from descending to the level of the animals. But he had descended to the point where his body now was a little bit more animalistic, and therefore, it became a source of tension / shame when it came to his neshama. I don't want to get too profoundly philosophical here. I want to just plug this back in here to some degree to the story, if you understand what we're trying to say. When Adam was trying to resist being above Hashem, being below Hashem, there was one place that he found himself. He found himself with the Nachash, with the snake, with the animals. He found himself bringing his body to some degree closer to theirs. And when he would be with Hashem, then he wouldn't be with the animals. Then he would be higher. Then he would be greater. Then he would be a human being, the one that has the unique capability of truly recognizing, that has within himself the neshama, that makes himself much higher than anything else. The same way when Adam and Chava bought this thing, you know, you don't have to be under Hashem, you could be with Hashem. The next thing they know, they're more common with the animals. It's the same thing with Nebuchadnezzar. Right? He thinks, he forgets about Hashem, and next thing you know, he's roaming in the jungle, right there, out there, with the animals. And the issue around which everything revolves is the physical aspect of our humanity. That part which is under threat and under negotiation in the story of Purim, is it just Noch, another animal that Hashem created in His kingdom? Or is it this picture of the carbon of Shloisha She'achlu al Shulchan Echad V'ayimim Alav Divrei Torah? Is it Jews sitting around the table on Shabbos with Mishte, with eating and with drinking, and what comes forth is Divrei Torah and Shiros V'Tishbachos? Vashti was trying to take the Jewish people on their Shabbos. Shabbos is the day where indeed you're supposed to take all of this. That's the one day when you're Mekadesh the Gashmias. You know, the Ramchal says, Moshe Rabbeinu Tzadik writes in the Mesillas Yesharim that a whole week a person should be very careful to behave with precious. Watch out, if you start indulging in physical things, you're just going to be growing this physical animal side of yourself and you could lose control, and except on Shabbos. And Shabbos is the day when you're supposed to learn how to somehow make your physicality shine. Like this Gemara says, that's Yom HaShvi. It's not necessarily every day of the week. Yom HaShvi is the time when the Jew sits around the table and they eat and they drink and they lift themselves up with it. So Vashti looked at these Jewish people, making themselves to some degree through Shabbos higher than everybody else. And she pushed them down. She made them go around unclothed. Serve her unclothed like the behemoths, like the animals. And she was the queen. She was the one who was in charge. She was the one with the ichus. She was the one who put her husband, so to speak, in his place. Ah, you're like my stable hand of my father. And she ends up herself, like Nebuchadnezzar, also at least part of her royal ichus, like an animal. Or like Uzziyahu. At the Tzaras, again, we're not going to discuss at length, but the idea is the Tzaras B'Mitzchai is the Tzelem Elokim, the image of Hashem, is most visible, as we know, on the face. And the Tzaras is the loss of the Tzelem Elokim, the loss of that divine image. So, again, you're just rejecting Hashem above you. Then you cease to exist. You think, oh, now you're higher. No. Now you're lower. I always come so late. So the question is whether I finish an hour after I come or I finish an hour after you come. I don't know. but I want to show you something beautiful. Something beautiful about the Torah. In the Torah here. So that perhaps we'll understand this better, and we'll understand I think it's a beautiful piece of Torah. Source 7 on your sheet is about Hashem putting Adam to sleep in order to create the woman. Vayapel Hashem alekim tardeim al Adam vayisham vayigar achas mitzalosa vayisgar brosot tachtana. He made Hashem man go to sleep, and he slept, and he took one of tzalosav, and he closed the wound underneath. He closed the flesh underneath, and he built that tzela into a woman, and he brought her to man. What's a tzela? Rib, right? Classic translation is a rib, right? Took one of the ribs of man and he built it into the woman. That, in fact, has no reflection in the Gemara, at least in the simple reading of the Gemara. The Gemara says, source 8, Amra b'yiriv miya bar Abba ben Elazar diyul partzufim ponim hayolay l'Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon was created sort of, we usually say this like as an androgynous being, right? He had two faces, he had two parts. He didn't look anything like a person looks today. He was somehow Siamese twins. Shenemar, as it says, Achor v'kerem tzartoni. It says, you created me front and back. You know, one in the front, one in the back. And it says, Vayiven Hashem Elohim Asatzela. Rav Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel had opinions about it. Chadamar Partzuf. One says indeed. That's what happened. There were two people sort of glued together, and then Hashem separated them. And now he had company, so to speak, outside of himself. But for Chadamar, and one says, no. It wasn't that. It was Zanav. Hashem took the tzela. The tzela was a zanav. What's a zanav? It was a tail. Now, what does that mean, it was a tail? So the same Rishonim that we said before said, no, a tail doesn't have to mean a tail. Tail means a growth. They say, Adam had some extra appendage. Maybe it was an extra rib. I don't know. Some extra appendage. And Hashem took that off, and from that he built Chava. But on the other hand, some say, it was a tail. And what does that mean? It means that Adam Harishon, originally Hashem put him to Minashama, but he was walking around wagging his tail. And he was lonely. And Hashem said, you know, it's not good for man to be alone, let me find him a mate. So Adam Harishon goes around with his tail and he's looking around all the animals. He says, these have nothing in common with me. So Hashem says, you're right, they have nothing in common with you. So what does he do? He removes his tail. Removes his tail. And he creates from that the Isha, the woman. Because you're completely different. You have nothing in common with the animals. And then, for the delicious flip side, you know, the snake, who from all the animals was the one who felt he was the most common to man, would come up, sidle up to Chava and speak to her, and maybe marry her, and so on and so forth. What does Hashem tell the Nachash? He says, because of what you did, I will create unbearable hostility between you and man. You're the one who's the closest, and yet, who likes going to the reptile house in the zoo, right? Right? It's the one where, you know, some people want to stay away from it, certainly the women in the party, right? They don't want to go anywhere near there. There'll be such a distance between you and man. And what else? You'll slither on your belly. Say Chazal, once upon a time, obviously, the snake had arms and legs. But now, what is it? All tail. It's one big quote unquote tail. Man has nothing to do with the Nachash. It has plenty to do with plenty of other animals. But the Nachash, where Hashem is forging, there is going to be a gap. There is going to be a difference. Don't make man like beast. The beast becomes all tail. And man loses his tail, loses his Nachash, loses his Zanav, excuse me. This is what we're trying to demonstrate. We're trying to demonstrate that the body of man is different than the body of beast. That when a human being eats and drinks, it doesn't have to be an exercise in indulgence like those lewd and lustful Persians and Medians and Ahasuerusians, whatever they were. No, when a Jew eats and drinks, especially the Emashvi, from that comes the mirrors. From that comes Divrei Torah. From that comes something high. And Vashti. Vashti was trying to drum that from the Jewish people, thinking she was so high. Forget about it, she couldn't do that. Now, to close, the story of Purim is the story of the Jewish war against Amalek. The Jewish war against Amalek is described in the Chumash in two passages. One that we read on Shabbos Zachar, and the other one that we're going to read tomorrow morning, Yetz Hashem on Purim. What does it say in the story of Parsha Zachar? Zachar asher she'asal lecha Amalek baderech b'teitzchem mimitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your way leaving Mitzrayim? Asher korcha baderech. He encountered you on the way. He cooled you off on the way. Remember Amalek's approach? But Hashem runs the world. Nah, this just happened. They don't accept Hashem above them. Vayizanev b'cha. What does that mean, vayizanev b'cha? He banged you on the tail. Now, that could mean, simple pshat is, he hit the stragglers. You know, the tail of the camp of the Jewish people, the ones who were behind, he caught. But Chazal see this now as machazanev. They associated with Amalek trying to get rid of the bris milah from the Jewish people. Which the bris milah is when the man and woman come together with kedusha. That's what it's all about. That's what Amalek was trying to do. He was trying, in a certain degree, to actually pin the tail on Israel, to make the Jewish people no bigger, no greater than anybody else, because they were attacking anything above them. Anything above them, right? Like was said before, anything above them they're trying to destroy. Klal Yisrael's above them, human beings above the animal, Hashem's above mankind. They're all trying to destroy that. And the story of Purim is showing us that when we come through the story and we recognize that in this story, where you see not a single open miracle anywhere in the story, it's all just human intrigue. It's all Esther putting on her nicest dress and her most beautiful makeup and trying to lure Ahasuerus to change his mind. Talk about mundane human effort. It has nothing to do with you. It's Hashem. Mordechai over here in Bigson and Seresh has nothing to do with you. It's Hashem. Everything is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're great. You're good. He's great. Always look up. That's the story of Purim. Right? In the story of Pesach, the Jewish people didn't have an egotistical an ego problem. They knew. They were just standing there and watching while Hashem was doing these miracles, turning nature into cartwheels. But in the story of Purim, you know, who knows what can emerge? No. From the story of Purim, we read the story and it's our praise of Hashem. We see Hashem is there and everything. You know, we think we run the store. We think we run this place. No, no, no. We recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's ultimately what lifts us up. And what takes away, so to speak, our tail, takes away our being from animal, and makes every part of us nikrav, offered up to Hashem. There's no part of the world that's removed from Hashem. There's no part of ourselves that's separate, that's removed from Hashem. Chayev inish lishume bepurya ad lo yada bein arham levarach Mordechai. So again, what's poshut, what's clear without question, is that for that mitzvah to be fulfilled, you have to see that when the person is intoxicated, that they're so uniquely Jewishly intoxicated, that you see in there the beauty of the guf, of the Tzelem Elokim, of the body of the Tzelem Elokim, to bring it all up, to take the korban, the animal, and bring it up to Hashem, to take the body and bring it up to Hashem, till you can't tell the difference between this is negative, this is positive, this is cursed, this is blessed. It's all underneath the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The more we recognize the greatness of Hashem above us, the greater we ourselves are.